There's a famous story about Rabbi Shaul Salanta. He was supposed to say a shiur somewhere, and he sent it in advance to Mayim Rakoma. And there were some people that wanted to trip him up a little bit to show that maybe he didn't know how to learn so well. So they played a game, and they put out a different set of Mayim Rakoma. It's not the one that he originally planned on talking about. He gets up there, and he sees the set of Mayim Rakoma that wasn't the shiur he was planning on saying. So he proceeded, found the way different versions of how the story goes, but somewhere along the lines, he proceeded to say the shiur that he wanted to say originally, using the Mayim Rakoma that were not really part of that shiur. I feel like, I'm not comparing myself to the Tosafot Lanta, but I feel like that was a little bit of a rough, because I had prepared these Mayim Rakoma to say a shiur last week, and then I went ahead and canceled the shiur last week. It's little did I know that I had parent teaching conferences for one of my kids last week. So last week's shiur got to cancel, so now yes, I have to say the shiur this week. On the other hand, in the past, we used to always say a special shiur about Hanukkah. And now I'm almost in a little bit of a pickle. On the way that I have, one hand I have the Mayim Rakoma printed here. On the other hand, I want to say shiur about Hanukkah. So we thought about it a little bit today. So we quickly revamped the title of the shiur. For those who saw the email went out, so it said, definition of Cholok, the purpose of the boss of the Cholok, and relevance to Hanukkah. So the relevance to the Hanukkah part was added as the day went on today. So each time we get to something that has anything to do with Hanukkah, so I'll make mention of it. So this is really a boss of the Cholok shiur. So just the Hanukkah part was a little bit of a joke, but at the end we'll get to the Hanukkah part. So there is not really, believe it or not, there is actually some real Torah, not Purim Torah, but real Torah that's relevant between one of the sugyas of Oseh Cholot and an issue related to Rosh Hashanah. So the sugya begins with, we call the definition of Cholot vis-a-vis the prohibition of Oseh Cholot. This is following along the lines that we spoke about several weeks ago, where we spent a lot of time defining what's called Bosser. Obviously, it takes Bosser and Cholot together to have a prohibition of Bosser and Cholot. It sounds like there shouldn't be all that much to talk about. The definition of Cholot, you know the story, by a container of milk, what's that great grandiose Chachma, what's considered to be Cholot. So there is much to be said about what's considered to be halachically Cholot for the purpose of Bosser and Cholot. That's really where our sugya begins. In the first time of Mekamot, we start off with the Taisus. The Taisus quoting the line of the Gemara, the first of the Mekamot, the Mevashim and the Cholot Potter. The Gemara that Taisus is picking up upon is a statement in the Sefer Chulin that Kuf Yedal and Aleph that if a person cooks meat in Nei Cholov, so he is Potter. One of the words is Nei Cholov, the simple translation of what Nei Cholov means. It means that we usually translate to mean whey. You know that milk is made up of two components. The reason why many of us have never seen the two components in milk is because the way our milk is prepared today, the way it's homogenized, it's made in such a way that it takes a long, long time for it actually to break into its two components. So in the olden days, you take a cup of milk and let it sit there for a few hours, so it's going to start to separate into its two different parts. It's separated into its the curds and whey, as some may remember from us in a famous nursery rhyme. So that's what milk does. It separates into the whey and the curds. The curds is the more soury part of the milk. That's eventually going to be made to make the cheese. And the whey is the liquidy part of the milk. This is already relevant to Chanukah because there are more quotes in milk. It's both the cheese and Chanukah. So I already made a mention of the fact that it's both the cheese. But we're not talking about the cheese part. We're talking about the whey part. So the Gemara says that if you go ahead and you cook meat in just the liquidy part of the milk, you separated the two, and you extract out the whey, and you're just cooking the whey, so that's not considered to be both Mechalot. Vashav Mechalot Potter. We're not exactly sure why that's so, but that's what the Gemara says, the Feirish. And Vashav Mechalot Potter. So it sounds like, in the simple meaning of this Gemara, that the only part of milk that's really, that's milchik, is the curd part, the cheesy part. So if you have a whole cup of milk that it hasn't yet separated it apart, then obviously you have milk in the rice, obviously you have cholam in the rice, because you have the curd still there. But if you could somehow figure out to separate the two, which again in the olden days was very common, if you just extract the liquidy part, it sounds like that's not really considered to be cholam in halacha. The place is very quick to point out that even though that's true on the level of the Araisa, that whey is not considered to be milchik, the surah mi'a'ika, says Tyson, is obviously prohibited with the Rabbanan. Nobody in the world would say that whey is not prohibited at least with the Rabbanan. Imagine if this Tyson wasn't right. This would be great for us. If you look at most of the stuff out there that has OUV on it, so except for things that have mamish real milk in it, it's all whey, cookies and cakes, all the stuff all has whey in it. So according to what Tyson thought, maybe the Gemara means that Mei Cholov is not considered to be milchik, mamish probably can be together with your flavor. That means together with your equipment. It's hetagogma, it's mamish nothing. But Tyson is quick to point out that that is not the case, that he's Sura Mia Ika. It's still also Midir Rabbanan. How did Tyson know that it's also Midir Rabbanan? That Kusach Minis Yubid Dechalba, of the Rekha, the Amr Parashi of Oivrin, because there was a famous dish that was served, the milchik dish that was served in the days of Chazal, called the Kusach. The Kusach was some kind of a mixture of whey with some bread and salt, and something that sounds very delicious. But Gemara says the fevish is considered to be milchus. Gemara, the whole discussion in that eating this kusach together with fleish. So there's no question that kusach is considered to be milchus, even though the Gemara says that the recipe, the ingredients for kusach, was the nisyuva dechava. The dechava is the Aramaic phrase for whey. But Tosafot says, you see from Chazal that they treated dishes that had whey in them as being milchus. So notwithstanding the fact that the Gemara says, it must be part of al-Osr, it must be that it's tukhut is milchus with the Rabbanim. So Tosafot took this Gemara that sounded like an unbelievable fula and basically destroyed it for us. Basically said that only the cheesy part of the milk is really milk, but the liquidy part is not. Midi Rabbanan, it's also considered to be milk. So if you take a look at the second of the Rambam Kavod, so the Rosh, in the third line, has something else to say about this Mechalav that the Gemara is talking about. Says the Rosh, and here is the third line, U'mechalav the potter, ha'inu she'hotziu mimenu kol ha'ochel, ta'acha she'osu ha'gvina, the vash from the cholov, the ha'ochel tzof l'malo, the lo nishabo l'mayim ba'alma, hu ha'nikra mecholov. The comes the Russian says that this mecholov that Chazal is talking about is not considered to be milchix mideraisa, at worst it's only mideraisan. Says the Rosh, this is not what we usually consider to be whey. We usually translate whey to mean, we define whey to mean, you take a cup of milk, separate it into its two parts, the liquidy part, that's considered to be the whey. So says the Rosh, no, that's not yet considered to be the whey. It's only considered to be mecholav if you take that liquid and then you subsequently boil it up and you separate that liquid into its further components, and then when you have a liquid left of that, that's considered to be the mecholav that Chazal is talking about. But what we call mecholav, says the Rosh, that's milk is mid deraisa. You just take a cup of milk and separate it into its two parts, both parts of milk is mid deraisa. The only time that the concept of something being milk is mid derabanan is if it's very, very far removed. It's in the Mei Mecholov, as we shall use the phrase, called Mei Mecholov. It's been prepared twice though. Why is any of this relevant in the halacha? That's the way, at the end of the day, the Raisa, the Rabban, at the end of the day, it's going to be a problem. You can't eat whey, you can't eat whey, you can't eat regular milk. It's all milk, halacha and Raisa. Why do we care about this? So the Rosh continues and he says, the Rambam Zal, there's a quote from the Rambam, but the Mefarsh of the Rambam and the Rosh said it seems to be a mistake in the steel. This is not a Rambam. Under the Rishonim, when they say this, a Rambam Zavai also be achila. So the Rosh quotes from some of the Rishonim, can imprint it as the Rambam, others claim it's other Rishonim, who have the following unbelievable Kiddush, that say that Mechalav is, forget about whether it's Mechalav or not, the word Mechalav that Chazal is referring to over here is considered to be Mamish Trace. They're not allowed to eat it all together. What in the world does that mean? It's a kosher animal. Milk comes out of a kosher animal. I extract the liquid, and I boil the liquid 100 times, and now I have this very, very watery, liquidy stuff. Why in the world should that be offered, based on what? But comes the Rosh and says, he refers it to the Gemara Masechet to Becharis. And the very common to Becharis, Matzich Posuk Lahatech Cholov, Mishun Dechol Bidi Das Michai Osor. But says the Rosh, if you look at the Gemara Masechet to Becharis, the Gemara teaches us that all of milk, even milk from a kosher animal, should have been trach. You know, Posuk Cholov, it should have been Mamash trach. Why? Because we have the rule of the Kashrus that anything that comes out of a non-kosher animal is automatically not kosher. What comes to the Gemara and says, milk is coming out of a non-kosher animal. What's not kosher about it? You can't eat an animal when it's alive, so there's a minachai. But since you're not allowed to take a bite out of an animal, so an animal when it's alive is considered to be in fact trace. Anything that comes out of that animal should automatically be trace as well. So all of milk should have really been offered to the Raisa. But we all know that you're allowed to drink milk. The Gemara says it's a special desire, so it's called Eretz Zavach Chalavadash. The Torah praises Eretz Yisrael as a land of milk and honey. Would be a very strange praise to say, come to Eretz Yisrael and drink all the trace milk. Obviously, the Torah is calling it Eretz Zavach Chalavadash. It must be that the Torah is telling us that milk is milk. So come to Yerushalayim and say, the starting point was that anything that comes out of an animal, out of a live animal, should always be asur, except if it's called cholav. Is there a sakasa that cholav is mutter? One could argue, cholav is mutter, but mecholav, way, is not called cholav. Haraya, milk is bosom of cholav, it's not called cholav. So since milk is bosom of cholav, it's not considered to be cholav, it was never included in the heter of Eretz Zavach Chalav Udash, and it remains in the original listener, calling out to the chayas also. So this is an unbelievable workshop. These Rishonim are saying, unbelievable chumel halacha. But anytime you see the word way on ingredients, we started out by saying, everyone knows whey is milchik, so we started off by saying, well, maybe whey is parva, maybe it's not so bad. Now we're turning around and saying, no, it's not milchik, it's not parva, it's trace. is waived by definition trade because it's considered to be a yaitzin and ha'ofer. So the Rush ultimately rejects the Shita. The Rush says that he doesn't think it's true. He calls down a couple more lines down. Rabbi Nassim Chazal, the fourth line from the bottom, but the end of the line, Rabbi Nassim Chazal Heshiv, the Dafka Le'inim Bas B'cholav El Chashav T'cholav. Says in the Simcha, whey is not, that's not called milk. Of course whey is considered to be milk. There's a special din, a localized din, Hukas Bas B'cholav, that's not included in the Yisr. The Kraka Ava B'cholav Imo, Kemoshe Yosef and Aim Urabim Ha'eichel. Comes in the Simcha and says, the fact that whey is not considered to be cholav, Hukas Bas B'cholav, doesn't mean it's not a shame cholav. It wasn't called cholav. What else is it if not cholav? It's just that Hukas Bas B'cholav, it's not enough just to be called milk. It has to be similar to the way it came out of its mother. Since when it came out of its mother, it was all Me'ur of Yach, was mixed together with the curds. And you go ahead and you separate it from the curds, and now you have a separate entity, a cup of a liquidy mechol or something. So for both the cholof purposes, that's not called cholof. But for all other areas of Allah, it is considered to be cholof. And therefore, it is included in the heter atonement of Eretz of Al-Cholof Bash. And now it comes out, we have Machlekes to be shown, Malach Raisa, is weight kosher or not? According to the first opinion in the Rush, all of whey is trade. According to the second sheet in the Rush, Rabbi Simcha, so all of whey is by definition considered to be kosher because it's considered to be cholov. Whether it's possible cholov, the Raita, the Rabbanan, not at all a subject to a discussion. But in terms of the kashrus of whey, the whey is always considered to be kosher. The halacha Raita, there's no question that we pass like in the Simcha. Anyone who's ever eaten any milch and cake or cookies, as by definition, as a line of the skula, we're assuming not true. We assume this is the correct in. The whey is considered to be kosher, but it is considered to be milchik, even the derayta on the derabbanan.
So, isn't there a problem that
for the milk? No, so we're going to get to the almond milk. That's already a much later discussion about the fact of the almond milk. But the pulse, the milk for sure, the special milk for sure, and the pulse. As referring to Chalav, yeah, real Chalav. So again, so we know pretty much what milk is. We think we know what milk was. We had a little bit of a question about the status of whey is, but pretty much otherwise we have a good idea what milk is all about. Comes the Shulchan Aruch, the third of the Ma'amar Kamos, and now raises a question about another kind of milk. In Yerdayan, in Siman Pei Zayin Tzitalit, also Levasha B'Chalav Isha Yipnei Maris Ha'ayin. Now, one is not permitted to use human milk to cook meat with because of Maris Ayin, because it looks bad. What's the Shulchan Aruch telling us? And the Ikra, the Din HaTorah, it's not really Cholav. Cholav only refers to Cholav Gedeit, Cholav Behema. The Cholav of an Isha is not considered to be Milchik Smid Araita, and it's not even considered to be Milchik Smid Rabbanim. The only reason why you have to treat it as Milchik is with name Maris Ayin, because it looks bad. You see somebody drinking something that looks like milk, you're having it together with the meat, doesn't look right. There's an Isser called Maris Ayin. Less people think that you're violating an Isser. But in terms of intrinsically, it's not really a problem. Therefore, the Shulchan Aruch says, "Imnafal sechatav shel batel ve'ein tzarech shir." And therefore, since it's not really also, it's not really chalav midaraita, it's not really chalav midarabbanan, it's just a question of Maris Ayin. Therefore, if a little bit of chalav isha gets mixed in to Shleishit food, so you don't need 60 times to be mevatel, and all the din of pitel that we're used to in your day don't apply, because it's not really both mechalav, it's not at all, not midaraita nor midarabban. It's just an iser in and of itself, we should maris ayin. Yes, I don't think there is a mechalik, it's around the Ramban, whether it's in a Surah Stay or not, but the mice of the Gemara says the Seirish that the chalav isha is not considered to be real chalav. The Ramban has a time, the Ramban and Pasha Shemini asked a question on the Ramban, how could Chol Isha ever be mutter? It must be fair, so Chol Isha Mikra Din is really mutter. It's not straight. So the Ramban says, and the Rambam is right, that Kesar Odom is also not Macholos Asuros, then why isn't all milk that comes out of a woman called the Yaitim in Asa? That's an interesting cash of the Ramban. The Mishnah tries to explain away what the answer to that Rambam is. The goal part of the Shulchan Aruch has introduced to us is this idea that you can have a liquid that halachically is not considered to be milk, but we still have to refrain from having it together with meat, because of the concern, because of the consideration of Maris Ayin. So that really opens up for us the main part of what we want to talk about today is this issue of Maris Ayin, particularly as it relates to Bas B'Cholav, and this is going to become the bridge, really, in terms of the Chachamim as well. Because, believe it or not, one of the main sugyas in Shas about Maris Ayin happens to appear right back in the middle of the sugya of the Chachamim. But this didn't the Shulchan Aruch agree upon the other one. Also, the Vashon, the Chalavishim, the Maritayin, there's a real issue of Maritayin involved. So it's based on this, that on the fourth of the Maritamos, that we have a similar halacha of Maritayin, which is going to become potentially relevant for us, halacha of Maritayin. So the Shulchan Aruch in the spot of the Maritamos, in the Sivan Samach Vav, this test, is not talking about both Lecholot, he's talking about a thing of Dam, the Yisrael in HaTorah to eat blood. The Yisrael in HaTorah is only to eat blood from an animal, to eat blood from a bird. Blood from fish is not considered to be a problem. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Gemara and says that the fourth of Maritamos, Dam Dagim, if you have fish blood, Afa Pishu Mutzer, even though it's what the mikra did to eat the fish blood, some kitzo b'kli also b'shemaris ayin. The same idea that if you fill up fish blood into a cup and you want to sit around and drink that blood, there's nothing else to do, so then you shouldn't do that because of maris ayin. Somebody sees you sitting and drinking a cup full of red stuff that looks like blood, that's going to be a problem. It's the b'shemaris ayin. L'sikach, therefore the shacharach, that's poorly from the Gemara. The mikra shumidagim, what if I can circumvent the maris ayin? What if I can make it crystal clear to everybody that this is not animal blood, it's not bird blood, rather it's Dam Dagim, which is Mika didn't really refer. If I can get that message across to everybody, then we can avoid any issues in Maritayin. How do you do that? Gon Shiyesh Bo Kaskasim Mutter. If in the cup of blood that you're drinking, there's at least some of the scale inside. So everybody realizes animals don't have scales, birds don't have scales, without scales, it must be, this is fish blood, and therefore there's no problem. So this is a verbatim quote right out of the Gemara Masechet. That midaraisa there's no issue at all with dam dagim. Midirabon and Chazal said you shouldn't do it with maritayin. But they said that if you put kaskasin in it, so that avoids any issue of maritayin. So in the fifth of the Mamakamos, the Ramah in Uchaz Basa B'Cholav quotes this idea, ready from earlier Tolkien, who wanted to extrapolate this idea of maritayin, the same that Chazal was concerned with maritayin, and the only way to get around maritayin is to put some kind of a physical, some kind of a hecker there. Something which makes it recognizable and nobody should think they're doing an Aveira. So there are some poskim who wanted to extrapolate from this to what's called shtedim, which you were referring to before, namely almond milk. So almond milk is not really tested milk, but it looks like milk, or coconut milk, or rice cream, or soy milk, and you know, a lot of stuff that we use today that gives off a little bit of an impression of milk. So the Ramah begins the discussion. What if a person has a cup of almond milk? Is he permitted to take meat and put meat into that cup, have the meat together with this quote-unquote milk? Is that considered to be a problem? So again, obviously with a Torah, that's clearly not a problem. Even with the Rabbanan, it's not a problem. But maybe we should ask for it out to Maris Ayin. Again, we have precedent already to ask for Maris Ayin, the Nukhaz Bokhi Cholav, we have in the case of the Cholav Isha. Or should we say that this is a problem or not? So there are more quotes that were early authority who said that it is a problem. That just as Chazal Aser having Dam Dagim, unless you make some kind of a hekir, some kind of a recognition, so too we have to ask the Chol Shkedim with Basar, unless we'll make the recognition. What would be a valid recognition? So the earlier Poskim write, but let's say you leave some of the almond the shells right next to, you know, to drink the almond shells, you leave some of them on the table, you leave them in front of the cup for the almond milk, and everybody realizes this is not regular milk, this is almond milk. So there were some folks who required this. And the Ramah comes and says that he doesn't think that that's necessarily correct under all circumstances. He says the Ramah, the fifth of the Ramah says, the Nagu Lassos Cholam Ishkedim, the minig is that people make almond milk, Manichim Babisar Oaf, and they would put the chicken into this almond milk, they cook it together with the chicken, nobody said that was a problem. Hol Ve'eno Rak V'Dirabonon. So the Ramah said that since the whole issue of Bosh Becholav and Besar Oaf is only V'Dirabonon anyway, as we spoke about great length 2 weeks ago, the way we talked in Halacha, so what's the worst case scenario? Someone's going to think that you're violating an Issur D'Rabbanan, big deal. What's the big deal, says the Ramah? It's not the same as a Dam Dagim. In the case of a Dam, so if somebody sees you drinking a cup of red juice, they're going to think you're drinking a Dam from Hema, they're going to be chashish that you're violating an Issur D'Rabbanan, so that's Marzayim. When you're dealing with something which your worst case scenario is only D'Rabbanan, it's only Besar Oaf anyway, what's so terrible? Not so terrible, and therefore we don't have to be concerned with maritime. But the Ramah continues about Besar Behema, Yesh Lanich Eitzal Achol Shkedim, Mishum Maritayin. But says the Ramah, but if you're having real meat, Besar Behema, from an animal, which of course the Pesukim call the Araisa, so then it becomes similar to the case of the Dam with the Kaskasim. And just as by Dam we are concerned with maritime, lest somebody think you're violating a Araisa. So too, when it's Besar Behema with Chol Shkedim, lest somebody think that you're violating the deraisa, would be required to put some shkedim there. You have to leave the pieces of the almonds or the shell there to avoid any confusion. But basically, the Ramah met the earlier Pesukim halfway. The Ramah says there is a fear of Marasayim, there is a sugi of Marasayim. The Gemara has Marasayim by Taham, and the Gemara insists on solving the problem by putting the kaskas and putting the scales there. So the Ramah says that any case that's parallel to that case of Dam, we will be concerned with Marasayim, such as the case of Besar Behema with Chol Shkedim. But if it's only a Besar Oath with Chol Shkedim, then the Yisra is only with the Rabbanim anyway, man, big deal, says the Ramah. What's Marasayim at the Rabbanim? What's the big deal? No big deal. Marasayim at the Arayit is a problem. Marasayim at the Rabbanim is not a problem at all. So this Ramah now seems to have many, many far-reaching conclusions. Because the Ramah just told us something which is going to be relevant way out of this technical issue of a Chol Shkedim. This is touching on the whole city of Marasayim. The Marasayim is only where the Arayit says there's no Marasayim at the Rabbanim. Is that really true? Can the Ramah actually say such a thing? So there's a shach, a long shach in the Yoredei on this Ramah, and the shach brings one raya after another raya to try to show you that of course there's a problem of Marasayim even by the Rabbanim. Well, Shemana doesn't really hear them. We never heard that there shouldn't be Marasayim on Yisroel the Rabbanim. So it's interesting that the shach has a lot of rayas, and I was wondering why the shach didn't bring what appears to be the best raya of all, that there is a fear of Marasayim and the Rabbanim. And that's Mamash in Yad Yom, but that's what the figure there is Tanakh. The Gemara has in the second verse of Masechet Shabbos, that's what Shana the Mamash comes to, I wasn't supposed to talk about. So in the under Chakim of Masechet Shabbos, the Gemara has the following discussion. The person has a house, and he has two different windows, two different doorways in his house, they're pointing in different directions. Remember, the days of the Gemara, the person always went, Al Pesach HaBayim. They always went by the doorway, right outside of the doorway. So the person has two different doorways in different directions. So you can have the following problem. Someone's going to walk by one side, and they're going to see, oh, this person, they're a Hanukkah, wonderful. And the other person is going to walk on the other side, and is going to say, this person, you don't like Neres Hanukkah. Because the guy's only going to light on one side, which is what the din is. You don't have to light 100 times. You light one menorah on one side, so anyone who goes on the other side is going to be cheshed that the person didn't light Neres Hanukkah. And the guy says, yeah, both doorways are in the same direction, so no one's going to make a mistake. The guy lit one and finished. But if the person has a two different sides, it's going to leave the day chashad, and people are going to think that the person isn't lighting their Hanukkah properly. So therefore, the Gemara says, the Chazal instituted that he has to put up two menorahs, Mishur Maris Ayin. And so that's where the Gemara has a whole discussion about Maris Ayin. Do you see clearly from the Gemara that Maris Ayin is a real concern, even though the issue involved is only the Rabbanan. The whole Neres Hanukkah, the whole Mitzvah Derabbanan, the whole Neres Hanukkah is only a Mitzvah Derabbanan. And still Chazal were concerned with Chashad. They were still concerned, what is the person going to think? We are so concerned with Marasayim and Chazal Chanukah to an extent that there are some folks who said that the person could even make a bracha on the second menorah because that's he's mechuyah, the Rabbanim, the second menorah. Even though he was technically Yaitin Eretz Chanukah already, he's missed the first menorah, that is Yaitin Eretz Chanukah. The fact that Halacha required him to put up the second menorah, that required out Marasayim. But once Halacha requires him to do it, then he has to recite a bracha as well. That's enough for it. Other folks can say, no, any mitzvah that you do just for Shema Yisrael doesn't warrant a bracha. That's a technical question. But the fact that he must put up a second menorah is for sure true. The reason why most of us have never seen this practice done is because the Pesukim write that this only makes sense when you're lighting outdoors, when you're lighting for the Bnei Rishis HaRabim, when you're lighting towards the people around the street, then it's going to lead to confusion. But Tosfos writes in the Sefer Shabbos that our practice is that we always light indoors anyway, because our primary halakha was the Bnei Habayit. Since in the days of Chazal, so they were able to leave the menorahs out in the streets safely, but then the Ikkar was the Menisos for the Bnei Rosh Hashanah, for the people outside. So Gemara writes that if you live in a place where it's not safe, you're going to take the menorah away, so you're going to pull it out, they're going to call the fire department, they're going to throw the menorah out. So whenever you're afraid something's going to happen, and then Chazal said, you don't have to bother lighting for the Bnei Rosh Hashanah, you can light inside. The place is right. That our Pesukim Nisa, our halacha today is a little bit different than the days of Chazal. The old days, it was for the Bnei Rosh Hashanah. But it's not as that. It's what the Gemara says, the B'di'evit kit. We're always afraid to leave our menorahs outside, lest the Goyim, we live day not Goyim, so the Goyim is going to take them away. But therefore, Tosfos writes, there are more closest practice that we are familiar with, the mice that we light indoors. We try to position it by the window, we try to get a little Pesukim Nisa, we have a little, a little mashu of Pesukim Nisa we can get, but the Ike Pesukim Nisa that's not as that is really for the Bnei Habayit. That's for the Bnei Rosh Hashanah. That's what the Ramah writes. If you eat your at Mokhi for the Bnei Habayit, so there's no more Marasayim. What are you afraid of? What are people going to think? People are going to think you didn't light. What do you mean? They won't see you lit. That's what they're worried about. In the olden days, you got one menorah out over here, one menorah out over here, one menorah over there. If you don't light in all different corners, all directions, people are going to get confused. People aren't going to know whether you're lit or not. Today, you gather everybody together. Everyone sees your light, one menorah. Everyone sees both throw together. One goes away. So there's no chashan anymore. That's why we're not so familiar with this halacha of ma'isa. But at least the Zmanic and others didn't really apply. We have to be concerned with the chashan of ma'isa. Notwithstanding the fact that the whole halacha of the neighbors is only the derabbanan, you see clearly that it is ma'isa even under derabbanan. What in the world does derabbanan mean? Is that a talmidic ramah? The Rambam says that you don't have to put out your amen when you have a chicken and milk together because it's only the derabbanan. Forget about ma'isa and derabbanan. And you have beside the hema, then you got to be concerned. What's that? That's b'chari not true. What's the job in the Ramon? Look at Techuva, in his comments in Yerodea, suggests that maybe what the Ramon meant is as follows, based on Gemara in the 6th of the Ramon Kamut, the Gemara says, Tzuva is left out of coming out. The time you're Nochem is Gal Yoimer, and Nochem from Gaul, Gaul was from France in the days of Chazal. So Nochem from Ishgal, you said, The following case: a guy has a roof and he's got a gutter on top of the roof that's filled up with water, and the problem is that it's stuffed. It's stuffed up with leaves, with dirt, etc. He wants to go up there and clean out the gutter and shop, otherwise roof is going to flood. But what can he possibly do? If him to go up there and mamash clean out the gutter in a normal manner, mamash the loch of their ISIS, But the Chazal said that what he is permitted to do is he's allowed to go up there and do it with his foot. He can kick out some of the leaves with his foot. But that's called kiliach yad. So it's not a real loch of their ISIS anyway. It's only kiliach yad in abnormal fashion. But worse, it's only this of the Rabbanan. The Gemara says the Mokum say that they were makel. They had to be makel. Otherwise, that guy's house can flood. His whole house didn't get room. So they permitted him to do that, but it had to be between that. It has to be quiet. It has to be private. Can't do it in the front of Eidah. Why can't he do it in front of everybody? But clearly, the Gemara was concerned with Marasayim, that we're afraid that if everyone's going to see him doing it, not everyone's going to realize that he's doing it with his foot. You're going to see a guy going up there and throwing dirt out of the gutter. They're going to think he's doing it with a utensil. They're going to think that it's a real Malach of their eyes. There is a fear of Marasai, and therefore he should be careful to only do it at the dinner. So place this in the back of my Matthews, in the 7th of my Matthews, it tells this to Kasha. What do you mean we're going to permit at the dinner? The Yomar Komachem She'asuk HaChomet Bei Marasai, and Afilu B'chadir Chadar Masar. The Gemara says that any time you're not allowed to do something because of Marasai, you're not allowed to do it even privately. You're not allowed to make a cheshbon. No, nobody's seeing me, so it's okay. Afilu B'chadir Chadar, even the privacy of your home is going to be a problem. The Taisav says, "Hainu dafka v'itzim malach d'arayt." The only time it was so machmir that even chadir chazar was also, that's only when we're dealing with the d'arayt. So what Taisav basically tells us is as follows: when you have a real marasayim, I mean, people are mamish washing, people are really seeing, there's a real concern. But then real marasayim is also, no matter what, d'arayt is d'rabbanan. We always reckon, we always have to deal with marasayim. When you're dealing with that real marasayim, because nobody sees anyway, but in anyway. So do we have to ask it like a low plug? Do we have to say that, well, just as it's also the Rav, it's also the Sinah? So there we draw a distinction between Malachas Deraitas and Yisroim Derabbanan. That's what the Sashuva says, that's what the Ramah meant also. The Ramah said that it's okay to eat the chicken together with the almond. You don't have to be worried about Marasayim. Where are you eating this? Says the Sashuva. You're eating this in your own house. The whole world's not watching you. He says, there's no real Marasayim here. It's just there's a din called Mokum Shasta Khamir Bay Marasayan up to the Khadi Khadar Master. Now once Khazal asks something because of Marasayan, it's also even in private. But that Khumra of asking things in private doesn't apply to their opponent. So the Rabbi never in a million years said that there's no Marasayan with their opponents. You can't say that. Get took a comment from prayers. The Rabbi never said that. All the moment to say was is that the lower level Marasayan is not the real authentic Marasayan. When there's no real Marasayan because nobody's really watching you, the fact that you have to still be concerned. That's all about their rights, it's not about their money. Oh, that's exactly what we're getting to. Okay, very good. That's exactly what we're getting to. Well, according to this view of the Teshuva, it comes out that even the Ramon was never made publicly. The Ramon was only made in the privacy of your own home. Anytime you're in public, when there's a real employee, then there's a real problem, even by the Rabbanan. So that's what, and And even that, the shachter is the shachter. Even by the rabbanon, there's a problem. Even private, there's a problem. But this is a shaila years ago when they first started with the parva milk, all the non-dairy creams, all that kind of stuff. The question was: is this considered to be a fear of maris dayin or not? So some wanted to suggest it depends where you're having it. If you're having it in the privacy of your own home, so then according to the Ramah, maybe there's no deraitus involved, then we could be nature. But if it's in public, then it's not like Neres Hanukkah. The same way Neres Hanukkah, you have to be concerned with what the other is going to think, even though the consequences are only with the Rabbanon. So too, even though there's only the Rabbanon, there's no deraitus here, you still have to be concerned. So if you have your non-dairy creamer, you have your part of ice cream, you have to be worried about Maris Dayan. How do you get around the problem of Maris Dayan? But we saw that in the case of the fish blood, you have to put the katkas, you have to put the scales inside the cup to make sure everybody realizes that's not real blood. Or in the case of the shkedim, according to the Nachmirim, you have to put the shells there, make sure that everybody realizes it. What would you do if you want to use non-dairy creamer? And the answer is, you leave it in the container. It means if you bring it out in the container, you're sitting in a restaurant, you're at a wedding, and they bring out a non-dairy creamer. So if they're bringing it out just in a cup, you know, in a container or something, and it doesn't stay on it, you know, however, it doesn't stay on the non-dairy, then that's mamish a problem. That's also according to the Shach, it's also even according to the Ramah, because that's mamish maris ayin. I said the Rabbana doesn't have to. There's a Chanukah that tells us that that's also. But if you bring it out in the original carton, if it says on the big bold letters, a parva, so then that's like halach, that's the modern-day halach equivalent of putting out the shkedim, or putting out the katkasim. So there are different opinions about this. So years ago, when all these parva items started, there were different opinions. And many lashkochas used to insist, and the restaurants have to bring it out in the container itself. Sometimes it's not so feasible to bring it out in the container, so you have to put it aside. I know it's just kind of chasmas the other day. So at the Shmolus board, there was a cream kind of a thing. It was obviously a special Shmolus board. It was a creamy kind of a thing. It looked exactly like sour cream. It was put aside. It sat on it. Parva cream. That's they were assuming that if you don't put up that sign, then you have a problem of Maris Ayin. One can maybe question whether this whole Maris Ayin applies to the Tanakh anymore. One could argue the Mezbah of Moon is Maris Ayin. That was 50 years ago when all these new things started. So, wow, that's a Chiddush. If you see a guy sitting and having ice cream, you have to place your meal, you have to think, oh, maybe he's violating both of us today. You go to somebody's house for Shabbos and they serve you ice cream. So you don't think, oh my goodness, wow, he's eating both of us. Everybody knows it's part of ice cream. But he takes Parvati, knows this thing. Maybe one can argue, maybe there's not so much of a Maris Ayin anymore. Maybe the whole thing doesn't apply. That's the question. Not everyone agrees to that. So there are some posts who still insist, even with Manazah, that there maybe it's still considered to be a concern of Maris Ayin. A koponim, this din of Maris Ayin that finds itself in Hilchot Cholah, founded by Chalavisha, we find it by the Chol Shedim, this whole, the whole source for the Sugi of Maris Ayin, the primary Sugi of Maris Ayin, appears within not in Hilchot Chanukah. And the thief, and that's looking at the Chanukah, the Chazal took Maris Ayin seriously, even the Gabi Derabbanan. But maybe you could chisel away, as Taisa said, that maybe Maris Ayin isn't so critical by Derabbanan, at least if it's Bittina. But if it's the Fahesia, then that is considered to be a problem. It's interesting, just a little bit of the Machshava, I'm going to get the idea that of all Sugis and Shah, so if the Chazal stuck to him, the Sugis of Maris Ayin took his Chanukah. He could have gone anywhere else in Shah, if somehow appears in the Sugis of Maris Ayin in the Sefer Shabbos. But I think the reason why Maris Ayin plays such a critical role in the Hanukkah is if you just think about it, what is the din of Maris Ayin? The din of Maris Ayin is that it's not enough for a person just to do things on his own, just to say, well, I'm okay, I'm fine, I'm doing the right thing, it doesn't matter what the world thinks about me. No. Hilchos Maris Ayin requires of you that whatever you say, whatever you do, has an impact on other people as well. Bein l'tov, bein l'ra. And that's, which is exactly the whole theme of the Hanukkah, Al Pesim Anisa. Why do we have to assume he's my Hanukkah? What about Q and everybody else thing? I light the menorah myself. I'll close the door, lock the door, light the menorah on my own side, and I sit in there. So I think we'll go and show you. It's in his mind. I want to do that. Yeah, we don't live in a bubble like that. We have to express ourselves the outside world also to see what we're doing. And things that we do are going to have an impact on what others think about us as well. That works again. So that idea that we have to address the oil and outside us. That's the difference. I mean, it's just not enough just to say the thing most of yourself, to say, I need to before the day. You have to be married with the rabbim. Whether the rabbim or your family members, whether the rabbim or the amish, the outsiders on the street, that depends on the place. But the idea that you have to take into consideration what the rabbim thinks, that's part and parcel of the mitzvah of Sunni Nisa. And that's true in the Chanukah, also in the realm of Maris Ayin, in the realm of Al-Zayrus also. The person can't take the attitude, I'm just going to do things on my own, and it doesn't matter what anyone thinks about me. No, it is important what other people think about me, because if people think that I'm doing a favor, that's going to detract from Kodesh Shemayim. If people see that I'm doing mitzvah, that's going to add to Kodesh Shemayim. Our goal is to try to add to Kodesh Shemayim. Behold, it's L'Hal L'Shim Chag Lelo. It's spoken in the Kaddish, Shem Shemayim Barabim. So the more we add to Kodesh Shemayim, that's the way to keep the Shem Shemayim Barabim. The more we do things that people start to think, hey, we're doing a favor, that detracts from Kodesh Shemayim. That creates a Chil Shem Shemayim Barabim. So the two sides of these halachos, the Menisa and Marasayim, are really very much apropos to one another. Both reflect one of the major themes of Hanukkah, that it has to be, we have to try to do whatever we can to make sure that it's takal hodus b'halashim b'lalo, that our actions will bring about greater kiddushim shemayim, not just for ourselves, but a greater kiddushim shemayim for Rabbim as well. That was just left.